Hi, it's Monday morning. It's Labor Day. And let me take a look at the Parsha, which is coming up this week, which is Kisese, which is being sponsored by Al and Jen Abramowitz. They're going to be here this week visiting from Israel. It's Alan's Bar Mitzvah, Parsha. Let's put it this way. It's a big birthday coming up. And this is being done. The Zecher Nishmas, Janet's brother, Yerachmiel David Ben Avram Chaim, Nisham Shabbat Aliyah, as they say. So thank you very much. Kisese, of course, is full of different stuff, and I've spoken about it before, but I'll visit it again. And that's what's this business with the weird Yefas Toar rule. Especially in light of the Middle East today, and all the wars going on, the Muslims also have a kind of Yefas Toar, except without the limitations. In other words, the idea of carrying off female captives, things like this, is kind of weird. And it goes against everything the one would think is the right thing to do. And it's one of the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. Now, by the Rambam's very careful to say it's not a mitzvah to take a captive in war, but rather that if one does, they follow a certain protocol. Because, you know, the protocol is, well, the protocol's not so pashut. It's a basic machlokas in the Chazal. You know, in other words, does the soldiers just do it on the battlefield, so to speak? Or does he carry off and, you know, and after she is menavelis herself and all that, after a month, and then you do it. Either way, it's kind of weird, although the second way is a little more, what's the right word, rationalistic, restrained, because the second way, which is that he can't do anything b'shas mice when they're captured, but after a month and after, quote-unquote, a cooling-off period, if he still wants to go ahead and forcibly marry her, I mean, that's what you're talking about. That's the weird part. Then it's okay. If you go with that system, as opposed to just saying they can do it right there on the spot, then it's sort of more with the idea that really you're trying to discourage the soldier from touching her in the first place. And by saying, well, you can do it a month from now and all the rest of it, since the heat of battle is not there a month later and the passion is gone and the mishagas is gone, the Yitzhar is weaker, so chances are that he'll say to heck with it and let her go. Because it says, you know, you can't bother her. So, losis hamar ba, which is just interesting. So, if you go that way, it's a little bit better. But if you could say you could do b'shas ma'isa, then it's, you know, I mean, I get it. You're saying that the Dibur Torah can negate Zahara, that it's impossible to restrain soldiers in a battle. Now, that's not actually true, but I get it. In other words, it happens. And the Torah is acknowledging that. And then you say, you know, you do it. But then it may turn out in the end, after she goes through a month of crying and this, that, and the other, that you know, let her go. But she could be pregnant by then, you know. It's a weird look. It's a weird halacha, and we all know that. And that's what makes it interesting in a strange way. And I'll tell you where I'm coming from. As is always the case, or just about always the case, whenever you get to these kinds of mitzvahs and rules and all that, there are always going to be multiple schools of thought of how to analyze it in the Jewish tradition. Because I've said a thousand times, the Jewish religion doesn't have a church. Doesn't have an official, you know, doctrine, but rather a bunch of rules. And that's what it is. It's a religion of rules. And the doctrine people try to impose, with the best intentions in the world, a kind of a doctrine on a ritual. And over the course of Jewish history, especially in the Middle Ages, you'll find that some, let's say, for example, more rational, some are more mystical, some are this way, some are that way, some are Hasidic, some are non-Hasidic, you know, and that's who we are, right? That's what makes it interesting. It makes it easy for people giving Dvar Torahs, because there's always a wide variety of approaches, just about always, if you know enough in the Jewish tradition. Yefas Torah is a perfect example I'm talking about, because it's possible to approach this in a kind of a rational way. And it's also possible to approach this in a mystical way. the idea that you find in a Sifri, which is Divrei Torah connected to Yetzer Hara, is a rational approach to this rule. War is an ugly thing, but wars happen. War is part of the human condition. It shouldn't be. And we say that in a perfect world, lo yisah goy el goy cherev, and so forth and so on. But on the other hand, as I always try to point out, if you tell me that in the Messianic era, which will be characterized by wars, but once the final war happens, there'll be no more wars, and that's how we understand it. So in the Moshe Mashiach, in some way or another, it's not clear, it will be apocalyptic, and the final redemption of mankind will not come through enlightenment, but through war. Now, there are alternatives to that. Like I told you, the Jewish religion is very rich, and there are different approaches. So, B'tachishana, you know, one way is that the human race will not need an apocalyptic final chapter, but will come to true enlightenment, and lo yisa goy el goy cherev, and people say war is stupid, and we can, you know, fix the world much better without wars, and so forth, which is true if you're going from a strictly rational perspective, right? In other words, if you took away the racial hatreds, the ethnic hatreds, the religious hatreds, and all the other stuff, and you just approach this business from just a logical perspective, what's best for whole mankind? I don't have to make the speech. You know, we could solve all the problems of mankind today, just about. Because there's enough food out there if you distribute it right. There's enough material and clothing and whatever that nobody has to go hungry. You hear what I said? And, you know, and we could even beat climate change and all that kind of business. But it's not the way it's going to go. Because Russia is always going to attack Ukraine. The Arabs are always going to attack Israel. China will always fight this one and the other, and all the other countries around the world. If you ask me today, in September 1st of 2025, how many wars are going on right now? It's a bunch. Just who's got the time to pay attention to that? You understand? I'm serious, you know? I have a life, so it's hard enough for me just to keep on top of the Israel situation and to a lesser degree the Ukraine and Russia war. But there's wars going on in Africa as we speak. There are wars that are going on in Asia as we speak. There's even some stuff going on in the northern part of South America. Blah, blah, blah. There's a bunch of stuff out there, okay? So the question becomes, you know, why is this part of the human condition? Well, it is. You understand? It's part of the human condition. And it shouldn't be, but it is. And if you tell me in Mashiach time will come an end to war, that's actually a very pessimistic statement, because it means it will require the coming of the Messiah to get the world to change. You understand? Okay, in other words, it'll take divine intervention. So in other words, something will cause people not to be able to revert to their normal, stupid way of fighting and killing each other. Some higher power will compel, you know, a coming together. It probably movies and novels like this, you know, we get attacked by Martians or something. Even that's not, let's say you're afraid of a meteor hitting the earth, and then that causes all the fighting to stop. But I don't think that would be true. If I told you a meteor was going to hit the earth, would the Muslim extremists, the jihadists, would they would stop? And would, you know, China and the others not do what they're doing? It is what it is. Okay? It is what it is. So, that's the human condition. Now, that being the case, even though it's not popular in our modern liberal culture to say that, because it's not, but that being the case, so you understand that the Torah has laws about war, right? Because you say like this, the Torah is supposed to be for a good society. Why is he talking about war? There's going to be wars, okay? It's going to be wars. Hold on 1 second. And if there's going to be wars, there's going to be death. You understand? It's going to be death. It shouldn't be. Be a better world without that. It's going to be maiming. As they gave us. And if there are going to be wars involving Klal Yisrael, they're going to kill us, we're going to kill them. They're going to maim us, we're going to maim them. And in this area, they're going to rape us and we're going to rape them. That's what it boils down to. It shouldn't be. It's bad. True, it's going to happen. And therefore, they're trying to regulate this in some fashion or another. And we have laws of war in the Bible. They're not exactly identical to the Geneva Convention, but we have, you know, in Dvarim, in our parsha, last week's parsha, you know, you come to a city, if they surrender, then you enslave them, and this, that, and the other, and some you don't. I mean, these are wars. I mean, rules. We used to think years ago that in the 20th century, things are getting more enlightened, and after 1945, you're not going to see the biblical conditions anymore, but today we know that's a joke. There's been a war, I'm serious about it to say, I think there's been a war every single year since 1945. Somewhere. You understand? In East Timor, in Angola, in El Salvador, and so forth and so on. You know, in Kosovo, and in Bosnia, and do you know about the war going on between Armenia and Azerbaijan that Trump is trying to stop over in Nagorno-Karabakh, whatever the heck they call it? It's who can keep track of this? But somebody has to try. So the Israel-Gaza war is going on, but it's only one. And we all know Israel is actually fighting multiple wars now, right? So in that kind of thing, there's going to be death, there's going to be violence, there's going to be wounding, and it's also going to be what we call today sexual violence. Like I said before, it shouldn't happen, but same with killing shouldn't happen. So in that context, you can say, Dibur Torah keneged yetzer hara, and you try to channel or restrain the yetzer hara, which is given full rein during a battle. You cannot go into battle, I would imagine, without a yetzer hara, because you have to have the bloodlust. You get it? Mioish hayori v'rach halevav yelch v'yashal v'esa. What does it mean? Yish hayori v'rach halevav. Now, I'm not talking about the Chazal explanation, you're afraid about Averis, but someone who's faint-hearted. You cannot go into battle faint-hearted, right? I mean, it's up to in the Torah, you know, in last week's and this week's parshas. It says the Kohen goes in last week's parsha, you know, Ki Seitzil Milchama, Alevech Barisa, you know, Sis B'rich B'am Rav Mechal Losi Rav Mehem. When it says lo tarzu, lo tig, you know, all these sorts of things, it means you got to go in prepared to slice people with your knife, to cut off heads, to stab, to do all kind of junk like that. And if you are rach halevav, and the Torah is acknowledging that some people by teva are rach halevav, soft-hearted, they don't have it in them, then yelech v'yashal l'beiso, then don't be in the battle, because you'll endanger the others. You know, like you see in the movies or in the novels, a guy couldn't pull the trigger. Meanwhile, the enemy came and killed everybody in the unit because he couldn't pull the trigger. You have to be ruthless. I mean, that's part of what war is. Again, it shouldn't be like that. It would be better if everybody's peaceful. And we long for a time, and they'll beat their swords into plowshares, etc., etc. But it ain't there yet, okay? So you can't go into Gaza now faint-hearted, as it were. There are rules of war that Israel adheres to, or they're officially committed to adhering to it. But, you know, stuff happens just like happened with the American army in different situations and every other army. Okay, now, having said that, so you say, from a rational perspective, that the Yafas Tohar has to do with the fact that people are unrestrained when it comes to female captives in battle and so forth and so on. And if that's the case, so at least you do it this way. If you tell me that that the din is that, you know, the soldier does it on the spot, is be with her right on the spot, and then goes through the 30 days as opposed to the other way around, then your mom is saying, listen, it's the heat of the battle, this stuff is going to happen, and she's in the wrong place at the wrong time, to be perfectly honest. She's in the wrong place at the wrong time. And especially if, as the parsha tells us, Bach says, Aviya Vesima Yerach Yamim, she goes through emotional crying for a month, and you know, she also says, Tzibur Neho, you know, she goes through all the medieval, she's going through a trauma, okay? Now, before you feel bad for her, she was on the enemy side, so she'd be happy if her husband did it to us, you see? And for all I know, she might be cruel and a bad person, blah, 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 blah. And that's why war is an ugly business. but it's a real business. That's part of life. Okay, that's one shot. But that doesn't comprise the totality of the Jewish interpretations of the din of Yifas Torah, which is a mitzvah in the Torah. I repeat, it's not a mitzvah in the Torah to do it. It's better not to do it. Okay? It's better not to do it. That's the famous story of King David, who had a son who was a Ben Sora Mora, Avshalom, who tried to kill him and came close to it. And the other guy, Husha Arkay, told him, he said, Zu Mishnas Chasidim, this is something. You consider yourself a chassid, meaning a pious person. You're not supposed to do that, even though the Torah permits it, but it only means Torah permits it for people who cannot restrain themselves in their lower life. Well, we expect people like you or from people in the army not to do something like that, right? No, there's no mitzvah that if you see, for Isa Bashivya Eshe Sifas Torah Chashaktaba, that if you see a pretty girl in the battlefield or something like that, they go for her. It's better not to. If someone can't restrain themselves, so it's a b'di'evad and alakatchila. Now, perhaps King David didn't see it that way, right? Why not? Why didn't he see it that way? So you could tell me like this. He was a human being, he made a mistake. That's the way the Gemara sounds like. He's a human being, he made a mistake. And he paid for it. Because he had the Avshalom Rebellion, which really ripped up his whole life and everything in many ways. And then you move on. However, you can understand that the very, 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 very frum interpreters, especially the mystics, the Kabbalists, they don't like that approach. Let's put it this way. I could give this speech also if you paid me. David HaMelech, are you chashish even for a second that he had tivus for, you know, these sorts of things, and he was at the level of a low-life soldier who couldn't restrain himself in battle? Chas v'chalil, the same guy wrote the Tehillim? Come on, give me a break, right? As they say today, you wouldn't imagine the Chofetz Chaim would do it. You wouldn't imagine the Chassan Ish would do it. And I don't imagine that they would do it, right? So, Kal v'chomer David HaMelech, you know, you can go it that way. And in my opinion, that is what is generating the Kabbalistic approach, okay? The Kabbalistic approach, which you find in Chaim Vital, in Likutei Torah, you know, in the Kitzvei Arizal. And I happen to have a book that I bought a million years ago from Yishai Chassidov. Oh, I was in Israel a long, long time ago. What year would this be? Back in the 1985. Okay, not that long ago. And it's very cool. It's called Biuri HaMekubalim B'Nigla. You get it? In other words, snippets from the Kabbalistic literature on the Parsha of the Week and things like that. In Tanakh. And here's the quote from Chaim Vital. Listen to this. Yesh lahavin, and this is a paraphrase to tell you the truth. It's not verbatim, but it's almost verbatim. Yesh lahavin inyan nefas Torah lamito. So Chaim Vital, who's telling you what the Arizal said, and we did the Arizal the other day, and this is a mystic, and he's seeing things beyond the surface level, okay? And it's a different approach. So what's shot with this yefas Torah? Real, lamito, really. Kol ila shiyotze melchama yukon tzedik and gemurim. Right? After all, if you go with Chazal, who was in the army that the Torah is speaking to? People are tzaddikim. Not the type that would fall for this girl. Because it says, Mi Oisha Yar Baracha Levi Yosh Labeso. Because the Kohen says in last week's Parsha, whoever is afraid or soft-hearted, leave the battlefield. Don't be in the army. And what does that mean? Hayari Mavir Sebiyodo. That, you know, that's the Gemara Sota. That one who's afraid doesn't mean what I said, me, myself, and I, because that was the Pashup Shah, but rather it means one is afraid because he has a virus. And he knows that the virus will get him killed in battle. Which means, if you go by that, whoever's left in the army is Tzadikim Gemurim. Soch Mein Tfil Tfil Chaz Meir Mechama. It says, even if somebody committed the sin of talking between while he's putting on tefillin in between the Shel Rosh and the Shel Yah and Shel Rosh, that's already enough of a sin that he would leave the battlefield, because that's the kind of sin that would get you punished, would get you killed in battle. So even people with, so to speak, somewhat minor averus would leave. In other words, when it says he was afraid of sin, it doesn't mean if you committed adultery, if you murdered somebody, if you did this and the other, worshipped idols, of course, but even smaller sins. But tzaddikim ko'elo echi tochen etzleim b'chashakta ba. If that's the case, then what is the Pasuk saying in our Parsha this week when it says ki seitz al mecham alavecha for isa b'shibi eishes yivastor v'chashaktabo, that you see a beautiful captive and you v'chashaktabo and you lust for her, you fall for her, cheshek, right? How could that be? How, like I said before, could you imagine the Chasen Ish doing something like this? I can't. Can you imagine the Lubavitcher Rebbe doing so? I can. So how do you explain that, right? Chaim Vital asks, or the Rizal says. So what's going on? Elavadi Yishu Zug Yeshba Nitotzes de Kedusha. Hakshur Mimnishmas Isha Zeh. V'lokein Choshak Taba. L'chein Tor Hitri Asa. Kedeshi Yizgabra Tov Shaba. So he comes up with a weird shot, and I'll tell you in my opinion where this is coming from. Not that I've consulted lately with Arizal, but Libi Umrli, which is all I ever do on a podcast. And that is, we have, at least coming to mind, two cases, well, more really, but two striking cases of sexual violence in the Chumash. It's actually three or four, but two striking ones. The rape of Dina and the captive woman in our Parsha. Okay? Now, in the case of the rape of Dina, it was a guy who did it. In the case of our Parsha, it's a Jew who's doing it. So there is that difference. Nevertheless, in the Kabbalistic understanding of these things, there's something in common with them. So, again, I'm just telling you my understanding. Things happen in life. But if a person's from, they say, well, God's organizing that it should happen this way. So if I stub my toe, I must have done something wrong with the toe. If someone is a victim of sexual violence or something like that, there's got to be some reason for it, okay? Not simply, you know, you did something wrong and therefore this happens. There's got to be some reason for it. And Arizal, like I told you the other day, is into this idea of Netzoseh Sheba Kedusha. Because remember, the Arizal himself lived most of his life in Egypt. And that's where he picked up all of his Kabbalistic knowledge. And then he went to Israel and said, how can you pick up Kabbalistic knowledge in a fishtunk in a country like Egypt unless you say that there was Netzoseh Sheba Kedusha around? That's why he was fated by Hashkacha Pratis, put him to he should live his life in Egypt, to suck up like a vacuum cleaner the Netzoseh Kedusha that are in this part of Chutz La'aretz, or among these people who are not Jewish, and bring it back into the Jewish fold. So along those lines, and remember, it's an Orach Chaim, I've quoted a thousand times, the Orach Chaim in Vayechi, where he, Miteref Ben Yolisa, that what happened with the rape of Dina was that it was destined to happen. And when it first happened, when he first assaulted her, it was purely for Tivus. But then, then something funny happened. It says, "Vatidbak nasho bedina basleo." You hear the language? "Vatidbak nasho." His nefesh clung to Dina basleo. Now you could simply say, as a rhetorical, poetical expression, that he fell for her. I get that, and Pashup Shot, that's true. But the language is striking, and a Kabbalist would say, a mystic would say, no, his nefesh clung to her, which means that although it happened in an ugly way, no question about that, but there was a certain attraction that he felt towards her because he himself had like a neshama of Kedusha. I'll dumb this down for purposes of this podcast. Let's say he had some Jewish roots in the background or something like that. And it, like a magnet, he was drawn to her without realizing it. So what he interpreted is simply he's going to assault a girl, which they did over there all the time. You know, it was that kind of a culture. It wasn't just that. But he found himself that even when the act was over, he didn't act towards her the way a rapist does, which is he threw her out like Amnon did to Tamar. But he wanted to marry her. And he fell, you know the story of Dina, right? And he fell head over heels for her and even said, I'm willing to circumcise my whole city and I'll give you everything in the world. And Harbo Laimor Amatan, he told Yaakov and the family, I'll do whatever you say to allow us to get married. And so and he really, really, really fell for her. And that's because there was this magnetism that he himself didn't realize, but a Mekubal realizes that, the, you know, that his Shorish Neshama had certain Kedusha, pieces of Kedusha in there, surrounded by a lot of bad stuff. And those pieces of Kedusha was like impelling him subconsciously to go and unite with Dina and stay with her. So it knows, according to that, and this Ramban, that, you know, if they hadn't killed out the whole city of Shechem, he would have, you know, he would have been sincere. He would have joined the Jewish people. You know, I know it happened in a bad way, but he would join the Jewish people. They take this idea in this passage from the Chaim Vital that I just read you, and you apply it the other way around. In other words, here in our parsha, in Kisetse, it's not the guy who's doing it to the Jew, but the other way around. But why is he doing this? So in other words, they're asking themselves the following question. Somebody's in the army who's a tzaddik. And because he's, if he wasn't, he was afraid of Averis, he wouldn't be in the army in the first place. And he's on battlefield, and he sees this captive, v'choshaktabo. He's not that type. Right? He's not that type that goes in for this lusting thing and all the rest of it. It's out of character. Now, again, if I took off my mystical hat and I put in my rational hat, you'd say even the firmest guy in the world and the saintliest person in the world, in the heat of battle, you lose all control of everything. That's exactly what battle's all about. You go berserk with the violence, et cetera, et cetera. That is true. But that's not how the mystic sees it. He says, here's a person like the Vilna Gaon, and he sees this girl with Chashaktaba. Don't make any sense. Don't make any sense. Unless you say that it's not that he sees this captive or that captive, and any pretty girl he sees, he goes after, which is what happened in battle. But rather, Ra'isa Bashivya Eshes Yafas Torah, you see a particular Yafas Torah, V'choshaktabo, and you find yourself attracted towards her. You understand? And you find yourself attracted, and it doesn't make any sense. That's because, let's say, she comes from a Jewish background, or mystically speaking, she has netzotzes of in the Shem of Kedusha or something like that. And you're drawn to that, and by uniting with her, even in an ugly way, somehow it draws out the Kedusha, so to put, which is hard to understand, but I'll put it in the simplest way that I can. Let's say it's a result of this. I'm just making this up, obviously. Let's say a story like this happened, which did happen to King David, by the way. Something like this happened. So the soldier went, and he did it with her, and as a result, even though after a month passes by, he says, I want to stay with her. And she agrees. Because if she doesn't agree to become Jewish, it ain't going to work. And so by the time it's over, she's a Jewish woman. It's a weird way it happened. It's an ugly way it happened, but it happened. And so her children, how should I put it? You who are listening in the podcast, it might be your grandmother. I don't mean that to be funny. You get what I'm saying? You don't know. If you're Jewish and you know, and you go all the way back, FFB or whatever you call it, if you go all the way back, so let's say you come from the tribe of Yehuda, or let's say you come from the tribe of Binyamin, something like that. Yeah, but who's the mother? Way, way back when. So you say, well, this Jewish woman and that Jewish woman and that one and that one and that one. Okay. And it could be, right? It could be that your ancestress was a Yafas Torah that was married by a soldier from Yehuda Binyamin, in one of those wars they had back then. And they stayed together. And she became part of Jewish people, and her children became part of Jewish people. And that's you here today listening to the podcast. It could be, right? No, there's nothing outrageous in anything I just said. And so a kind of Kabbalistic process manifests itself in this weird way. But we already saw this with the rape of Dina. So it's one of the ways of bringing the Tzotzos of Kedusha back. It's a little bit like the Sayer LaAzazel that's coming up in Yom Kippur, which is, you have to sort of notice, why did this happen in such a bad way? Why couldn't it be that this lady who's not Jewish was somehow inspired to become another Ruth and on her own come to the Jewish people in the highest idealistic sense? I get it, but the answer is, sometimes the Yetzer is running the show, and you have to sort of accommodate to the Yetzer. The same way they talk about the murky roots of monarchy, that's why King David and all that, the family, you know, go with the rape, you know, Yehuda and Tamar and so on and so forth, you know, and Lot and his daughters and Ruth and David and Bathsheba and all that, you know, Iron Art Scroll. If you know, I think you probably know what I'm talking about. And so that's part of the Sar Lo Soto business. So this is also, right, according to the mystical way. And therefore he says, Yeshba Nitzosa de Gedusha Hakshur Mim Nishmas Ishazeh, V'chashakta Bov Lachena Tor Hitlo. So that's why the Torah says that you can do it, Kadesh is Gabra Tov Shabob, V'yidches Arami Meno, V'tikones Hacher Kachazer Al Kedusha. And that's one way of bringing her back to Kedusha, which is buried deep within her, even though it happened in an ugly way. Okay? Now, that's fine with me. Then the problem is, of course, with this theory, what do you do with the fact, as we all know, that we're told, because of this King David business and Kushiarchy colloquy and the rebellion of Absalom, that when it says over here, you'll have a Ben Sora Mor, that's a direct result of marrying a Yafas Torah. Because that's in our Parsha today, you know that. In the beginning, it says, first you have the Pas Torah, then you have the Bechor HaSnuah V'HaHuvah, and then the Ben Sora Mora. And King David was told, why are you surprised that your son rebels against you? If you did with a Fas Torah, you'll have a Ben Sora Mora. So how mystically do you understand that? And here it's like a dochik, because it says, Amashi Yotzi Achkach Miyana Ben Sora Mora, Hu Mishum HaSigim She'od Moru Ovim Bo, like Yishmol Ma'am Ba'isim Yitzhak, that when we say over here that you're drawing this Yifas Torah to Judaism, the Torah, even in this ugly way, in this violent manner, but you're saying the Kedusha deep within her is like being drawn like a magnet to the Jew. But that's not all she's composed of. She's also composed of Nitzotzes of non-Kedusha, what should I say, Tumah, something like that. And what do you do with those? They will manifest themselves in the children, where they can, right? They can. Now, if that's the case, it should be, if you take it simplistically, that all the children will come up in Sora Mora. Not necessarily. There will be among them some. So in other words, if you look at this woman in the Kabbalistic fashion, you say she has Nitzotzes Kedusha in her, Nitzotzes are sparks. So let's say she's 50-50, 60-40, 70-30, something like that. And it could be all kind of combinations in this mystical approach. So let's say for argument's sake, she's 30% Kedusha and 70% Tumah. So the 30% Kedusha will, cling to the Kedusha of the guy, and that will manifest itself in her becoming Jewish and having Jewish children. But the 70% of the Tumah will also manifest itself in the children being bad or juvenile delinquents or Ben Sora Moras and things like that. On the other hand, the 30% Kedusha will also manifest itself. So some of the children will turn out good and some of the children will turn out bad. That's what it boils down to. So in the case of Avshalom, which is complicated because I don't want to get into halachic business, but they say that Tamar was from the first Bia. So Tamar was not the one who was raped by her brother, Amnon. She was not a bad person as far as we know. And, she's a victim, right? Can't blame her. She's a victim. Don't go that route. So Shitaka was okay. But the next kid who came after her, meaning after David married her, the Yifas Torah, meaning after the month was over and they decided to stay together, so that kid turned out to be bad. So you see, it was 50-50. One kid turned out good, one kid turned out bad. So today, like I said before, you may be the progeny. We don't know. You may be the progeny of such a thing, but you might be a good one or a bad one. So if you look at it in this Kabbalistic fashion, they might go around and say, you look at good people and bad people. Some come from your false stories, come not your false stories. It's not as simple as that, but that's the approach you have. Anyway, I was going to talk about something else also, but I've gone long enough on this. It's just a classic example of how you can approach a din, an institution in the Torah. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs. From a perspective A or perspective B, from a rational one in which you say it's all a b'diavad, it's a bad situation, it's part of human passion, it's one of the unfortunate consequences of war, there shouldn't be any wars, and so on and so forth. Or you look at it the other way and you say, how could somebody like David HaMelech or others like that succumb to this?
the human, the mystic says like this, the human being is not just an animal. The male is not just simply some kind of a behemoth that as soon as he sees a girl, he goes after it, right? The human being can transcend that. A tzaddik is supposed to do better than that. And why does it happen over here? Must be some deep, you know, reason of the nitzos of the kedusha and all that kind of business. So it's a complex matter, and the truth is there's a lot more to talk about it, but I've gone 35 minutes already, and I don't like to go too long over here. And so with that, we'll close it down. Again, I want to thank Alan and Shannon Abramowitz. We're going to be Mirza Hashem in Baltimore this week, and this is in Zichron Nishmas, Janet's brother, and Hashem Shabbat Aliyah, as we say. And with that, I wish you a good day.